Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 203 with the title Belonging Beyond Borders. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Solveika Jaskornis. Solveika is an international keynote speaker and HR consultant who helps immigrants and expats thrive at work by turning lived experience into practical, human-centered inclusion. When I asked Solveika to describe her superpower, she said that it is leading with hope, compassion, and vulnerability. Hello, Solveika. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Joe. It's incredible to be here with you. Like, we had several communications over LinkedIn, and now it's nice to meet you in person finally.
We did, and I think it was almost a year, coming from a year, since you originally applied to be on the show, and it's taken us, 11 months to finally connect and be here today. So this is fascinating.
Yeah, it is, and you have incredible conversations. I totally love them.
So I'm guessing from your accent that you're not born and bred in the USA, because you're currently living in Washington, D.C. You've started off your life in a different part of the world?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Lithuania, Eastern Europe, and then I lived in the States for more than 20 years already, so for some time.
Lithuania, it's part of the Baltics. It's the southernmost, southwesternmost Baltic, isn't it? So you've got Tallinn.
If it's capital of Riga and Vilnius.
Yeah, so you've got Vilnius, and capital of Lithuania, and you've got the Estonia, and you've also got the
Latvia.
What's the other Baltic? Latvia, that's it. Riga, in fact, Latvia, yeah. Sorry, my mind went blank there. It's a beautiful part of the world. I've spent time in all three of the Baltics, and the architecture and the people, the culture, it's a fascinating place to be, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a quiet, you know, it's different than the state. It's more peaceful, quiet. There's a lot of like beautiful nature. I like it. And yes, Vilnius is a very beautiful city. I studied there. It's a intense like cultural life, but it's also small and it is easy to get around.
So you moved to the US, 20-something years ago, as you said. How did you find that initially? Because you said you came from a very small, insular country. Everyone knows each other. You know, literally, they almost do know each other. To a big place like Washington, D.C., where you're kind of lost in the hustle and bustle of the year.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not about the size of a city, but it's more like was hard because you live here, as you mentioned, everything you're familiar, you love, and then you come to the place where you suddenly you don't have friends, you don't know how long it will take you to find friends. Initially, when I had a degree in industrial psychology, I was not getting a single phone call, and when I started getting phone calls or interviews after starting getting my second master's degree, my interview experience was worse than not getting a job. Because when your interview ends after first question or like your voicemails doesn't get written, you don't, at that point, like I didn't know even how to compete. Even like, such like when I traveled in Europe, I thought my English is quite okay. Like even I went, was in Britain, and people in Britain are very used to people from other countries, and you will say, oh, like, please repeat if you don't understand. Or they say, oh, your English is so good, you know, please continue speaking. And then when I came to the States, this is where my confidence, I think, got crushed, because some people will walk away and they say, like, I didn't understand a single thing you said. And I said, at that point, you know, think you didn't, you know, like, I knew that I have an accent, but, or like, they will say, I don't know how you got hired, you know, your English is, I cannot understand, bring somebody else. So things like that makes you like, yeah, like you suddenly start questioning. And of course, it's very hard to change your accent. It's very hard to change how you speak. And even you work, the progress doesn't happen right away. So, and even now, like, as you can see, like, I've lived for many years and I still make mistakes, and probably I'll make till the rest of my life, because sometimes you get used to say certain way things and pronounce certain way, and it's hard to change.
So which language is Lithuanian most like? Is it more like Finnish? Is it more like Russian? Where is it derived from?
It's similar only to Latvian. It's a Baltic language group, so it's very different from others. And yeah, I speak Russian because I had to learn at school. We are part of a Soviet Union, so we had no choice. But it was a very difficult language because very different. And I think the most similar to Sanskrit. We say, like, everybody who studies Sanskrit, we study Lithuanian and Latvian because it's the most similar.
So it's not even closely related to Estonian or to Latvia. It's just Lithuania.
It used to be Prussian too, but that language disappeared. So now we have just two small countries, and yeah.
Wow. So you mentioned there you grew up in that era pre-Berlin Wall, I guess, falling down, and the solidarity movement in Poland, all of that kind of era in the 80s. So how was that for you growing up as a young person in that world?
Yeah, so like it was definitely very exciting to get independence. I remember that time. And yes, sometimes I don't know if I would even know I knew that, you know, what we are getting is propaganda. But what I didn't know are the real even stories about my own family or about my country, because people were afraid to speak or share. So I find out, like, for example, that my best friend's father was in Siberia for 20 years only, you know, during independence movement, because nobody talked about those things. I didn't know that my uncle was in KGB prison, and when he came back, like, nobody even could recognize him. But I find out, I even didn't know what KGB is growing up. Nobody talked about it. And so you knew that, you know, that yes, we are not, you know, the people say, oh, you live in the best country in the world. We knew that people in the West live better. But we didn't know I didn't know even like what Lithuanian flag was. I didn't know the history of my country, my family history. So a lot of things we find out in independence movement. And yes, I remember my first trip to Berlin. Actually, Berlin was the first city in the West I visited. And it was shocking to see, you know, how different it was at that time. Comparing to Vilnius, time was no renovations and for 50 years. And it was shocking to see it. And when I came back, I remember how sad Vilnius looked to me. And I thought it will never look as the rest of European cities, because it was nothing renovated for 50 years, was falling apart, was very gray and dark. And I thought, oh, this is the city I love so much, but it looks, you know, so different from the West. And yeah, it's beautiful to see that the changes, and I thought it will never happen in my lifetime. And now, like, you know, when I go back, I think it looks as beautiful as many other European capitals. And maybe in like some ways it's more unique because it has this still imperfection, and that is also the beauty of it.
Yeah, I think I was there in about 2007, and to me it seemed like a very vibrant culture. didn't feel, they didn't feel like any deprivation or anything like that. So I remember being in Hungary, at Budapest in about 1996, 97. And that seemed very, very backward to me at the time. The hotel was really felt like I would imagine a Soviet era hotel was. There was no comfort. The mattresses were like 2 inches thick and the really hard beds. Everything was like tiles and hardwood and nothing soft. It was very, very square and boxy. So I guess the world had moved on in that in 10, 15 years since I was in Hungary. So yeah, I guess in the Baltics also developed quite quickly once they found their freedom.
Yeah, definitely it was. And it's really amazing to see all the changes happened. And not only, you know, how the cities look, but also how people, like, you know, see opportunities and the whole culture change in so many good ways. I really like it. And yes, talking about Berlin, I remember our first trip, and as a students, we got to go to the camp in Germany, and we got money for the train tickets and the hotel. But at that time, for us, that money was so big. And so we decided, four of us, that no way we can spend money for the hotel. We'll go and find ways to be, because we needed money. So, it was an interesting trip going to a city in a country we've never been before and figuring out, like, what we are going, you know, exploring basically a city through all day, night, and the next day, till we've been one to the camp. And in some ways, it was one of the most memorable trips because, yes, you experience it all the time. But yeah, like I would now, like, you know, I wouldn't think, you know, to travel that way. But at that time, you know, we had this recession. As a student, we didn't have money, and it was for us a way to travel and see the world, and we made it work.
Why did you pick the US and Washington as your destination, or did you try lots of different places before you settled?
Not so many. Other places I just, you know, visited or traveled. My husband's American, so we met in Lithuania, and that's how, like, we end up in the States.
So you travel for love.
Yes, it happened. We met in Lithuania, and then he said, let's get check out. And checking out, you know, sounds good, but being an immigrant is not the same.
So we called this episode Belonging Beyond Borders, and we talked very early in the introduction about that sense of belonging. It must be really hard to go from a culture and a language that you've grown up with, even though you had to transition from the pre-Soviet into the post-Soviet era and see the country develop. You're still moving to the US, which is a completely different culture, not knowing anybody, where whilst you can speak English really well, you don't speak English as a native American or a native English speaker. How did you find that lack of belonging, and how did you move into that sort of sense where you started to feel comfortable again?
So it definitely is a journey. Like I tell everybody, like I mentored a lot of immigrants as well. It doesn't happen right away. And in some ways, when you, that experience definitely challenges you in so many different ways, but also, and definitely humbles, because you there are many days that, yeah, you don't know if you ever will be able to compete. I think what changed for me, like a lot of different things, but what it helped me, first, like, you know, when talking about the interviews, at some point I thought I will not get a job, and was like really difficult, as I mentioned, experience when you go and you see that people are not interested in you right away as you start talking. And at that point, I realized that I don't care if I get a job. I just want to get better and more comfortable in the interviews. And I started instead going to every interview and think about how I can do better next time. And I start comparing my own progress to where I was, you know, you know, a month ago. And then when you start seeing progress, it changes. And then you also stop paying attention what other people think about you because you think about yourself and see your own progress. What also helped me especially in the last few years, I thought I'm already quite confident. And then I was challenged, you know, to be visible and to do speaking and being visible on the social media. And I've realized how much I still had that imposter syndrome about myself that I didn't even realize. And I've learned, you know, how helpful it was for me to be more in the rooms where I feel don't belong. Like in the past, I felt more comfortable going, you know, to be in the places, like maybe to be a lot of other immigrants where people could resonate, experiences or languages not the same. But I've learned how it was useful for me to go to the rooms where the less comfortable I was, the more value I got it. For example, I would, in those recent years, I would go to the meeting and I would think, okay, here, this person, the most, strongest leader in the room, the most accomplished, the person probably will never get back to me. Or then on the social media, I will think, okay, who's the person maybe is likely for me to respond? And I will reach out to the people, very accomplished, the people who maybe will never respond to me, and asked for the conversation. And I've learned, you know, how helpful for me was those conversations and most mentoring sessions where they suddenly pushed me out of a comfort zone, who said, like, you have to be visible, you have to be speaker, thought leader, and influencer. And I said, well, that is not for me. And then they say, why? And then I tell why, you know, I said, like, I just don't like it. And now I've realized, and now they said, I met the same mentor, said, Solveiga, look, you are doing everything that you told that is not for you. And I've learned, you know, how, yes, it's helpful for me was to challenge my own comfort zone and to get to know people who think and act differently, and who don't say, like, do only this thing, think big, act big, speak big, be bold.
What you're saying there about the imposter syndrome and the have to force yourself out of your comfort zone and move out of the, if you like, the comfort of being in, with the expat community, the people who kind of share the same problem. I can certainly relate to that because I've been through that phase in my life where you can hold yourself back by living in comfort, can't you? And mm-hmm. when we're judging people, or judging ourselves, and I think when you talk about imposter syndrome there, your reference model of who you are doesn't evolve very quickly because it's always on your tail. So you have to almost jump out of your comfort zone in order to see those changes. And then you look back over your shoulder and think, wow, I've come a long way. But day by day, you don't feel like you've changed. It's really interesting what you say about the interviews, where you are going to each interview looking to do better than last time, preparing to do better next time. And eventually that would pay off and that confidence would shine through, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and it helped me not only, you know, and feel better because I just, you know, stop paying attention, you know, what other people think, but also helped me to help better others. Now, like, I help a lot of other people in interviews because I start giving different examples and seeing what will resonate. I got better, but I also start paying attention when I start interviewing others. I've realized how many other people, especially like immigrants or expats, they make the same mistake as I do. They don't really tell the stories. We talk too much, too little, don't give a good examples, don't give examples at all, and so on. So it helped me to help others better. And yes, I got better myself.
So how do you find the US as a society? Is it welcoming? I mean, I see a lot on the news and the media about political discourse at the moment. How does it feel being a, I don't want this word to sound derogatory, but an immigrant, I guess that's who you are. How does it feel being in the country right now with your background status?
So I think, you know, this is, in some ways, it inspired me, the conversations. Like, so when I search, you know, private conversations, nobody, I say all the time, I'm an immigrant, people don't say anything. when I start speaking about immigrant experiences, my first podcast, people start asking me questions like, why do you even call myself an immigrant? At that time, like, you know, for me it was strange, you know, and I say, how come, you know, I'm an immigrant. And so some people say, you live here for so many years, why do you still call yourself an immigrant? Or like, why do you call yourself an immigrant when you are like, you know, having your own consultancy? And I say, well, when I was making $7 per hour, then I was an immigrant and now like I'm not anymore. Or like they will say, some also valid points, like, we will say, look, Americans who live in your country don't call them, we call themselves expatriates. So why do you call yourself an immigrant if you live in the States? And so on. Or like that you don't look like an immigrant. And I said, look, how look immigrant looks like? And then they say, well, in America, immigrants looks like the ones who cross the Mexico border. And I said, well, I cross different border. And for me, immigrants, no. Coming from all around the world. And so, yeah, it was interesting. And that's why I've realized that even this, or like I helped other immigrants and I say, why do you call other people immigrants? And I've realized, well, yeah, maybe it's true. Like some people don't like to be called immigrants. They like to be called expats or foreigners. But yeah, like I, in some ways that inspired the conversation because I found that being an immigrant was definitely challenging experience. Definitely you don't feel welcome all the time. There is a lot of now thoughts about these good immigrants or bad immigrants. Well, for me, it's like, you know, it's just being immigrant doesn't make you bad or good. It makes your, it's challenging, but it doesn't make you a good or bad person. And so, yeah, like that's what inspired because I wanted to show that being immigrant does not diminish your value. Actually, it expands your world, it expands your perspective. I wanted also, like when I start speaking, a lot of other people say, please be a voice for us because we never have a consultant or speaker who sounds like us in HR. And I've realized, yeah, a lot of even conferences I go, nobody talks about immigrant experiences and nobody, there are not so many people who have accents and from other countries, especially in HR. So I felt like, yeah, in some ways, it's important conversation. And that's why I started, you know, considering because I felt very passionate about it.
So would you class yourself, you know, in this phrase you use, a good immigrant, as opposed to someone maybe who's from Central America or Southern America, might be framed more as a bad immigrant in the language? I mean, do you have privilege by being from a good country? Is that how you would say it?
I don't know. It's a privilege. Maybe it is. But it's also like I just don't like altogether this classification because
I
think this is altogether America is based on most people are immigrants at some point. Most, not all, you know, there are very few who would consider themselves natives from native backgrounds. It's there is a beauty of it, you know, food and culture. That's what I think makes America so unique because of a diversity of people and different generations of immigrants that brought so much value to it. So it's yeah, I don't agree. And so like it was interesting initially when I start, you know, speaking, I thought that only immigrants will relate to what I talk. But then suddenly people from all kind of backgrounds say this conversation is important. They say I felt like an immigrant in my own country. So, or I have disability and you don't, but language can feel like disability. So understand that it's important people with disability. I also felt like I don't belong. I face different stereotypes than you, but it's still stereotypes. Consider that, you know, what you talk, it applies to so many people. It's not only for immigrants. And this is how I feel like, you know, it's important more talking about experiences, what it's like, you know, to just belong, overcome challenges, be more sensitive to others.
Do you call yourself American now? Or do you still see yourself as an expat immigrant? Are you American?
Yeah, well, I know. I think I still consider myself Lithuania, living in the States. Oh, like, yeah, when I land, you know, when I go back to Lithuania, I don't consider myself immigrants in my own country, depending where I am. But I also appreciate experience. I appreciate that a lot.
So do you have an American passport now?
No, I don't. I'm a permanent resident because Lithuania doesn't allow dual citizenship. And that is the reason I don't want to be a foreigner in my own country. So I don't.
Okay, so you'd have to renounce your Lithuanian citizenship in order to get an American citizenship. So, and that's important to you to hold on to that.
Well, I think it's important, you know, to my heart. Like, you know, we fight for independence so long. It was very emotional to get Lithuanian passport for me. So it's like, it's dear to my heart that, yes, you know, you don't want to be like a foreigner in your own country too.
No, I get that. Because if you're not careful, you end up belonging to nowhere. And
well, it could be.
So you've built your life with your husband, and you built your business, and you've done this. Have you found that sense of belonging now? Do you get to the point where, whilst you have your Lithuanian passport, you feel as American as you can be?
I definitely now feel comfortable in some ways. I probably never considered opportunities. And in some ways, in both places, in Lithuania and in the States, I feel I belong. And in some ways, there are things that I also don't belong as much. I don't know, both ways. There are situations that you change and you think differently and you act differently. And it was funny. Last time I went to Lithuania, my friend said, "Solveiga, you think as like American, you changed." And I said, "What do you mean? Like, I didn't." And they say, "No, you did. When you talk of you think everything is possible." And I've realized, you know, these few years, you know, I had these mentors who always say, you can do it. And I start doing things that I never considered before, like speaking. That was extremely hard. And yeah, like, and now whenever people say I cannot, I say, no, did you try? Like, you can do it. So yeah, maybe I'm changing, yes.
Which language do you think in? Do you think in Lithuanian or do you think in English?
I think in both. I don't know. It comes natural in both.
What about if you have to do, add up a sum in your head, if you're counting and adding up a numbers? What do you add up in your head?
Yeah, that is a good question. Well, some things, yes, I think it's more comfortable in Lithuanian, but I switch back and forward and I don't think anymore.
No, okay.
I just, one thing I've realized, you know, sometimes when I start speaking of somebody in Russian, because I speak Russian as well, I somehow like it doesn't switch back sometimes because it's also a foreign language. But from Lithuanian in English is easy.
Okay, so Russian is the hard one.
Yeah. Russian, I'm fluent. Actually, maybe my Russian pronunciation is better than English. But, I'm good too.
I guess Lithuanian and Russian, what's their different languages? They sound very similar in the way you pronounce words, and your accent sounds more Russian to me than it does English. So I guess you would probably feel more accepted from a native speaking Russian perspective than maybe a native speaking English. I don't know. Do you think you do? Could they tell you're not native Russian?
No, they will tell that I'm not native. They will tell it. But they will say my Russian is very good. This is what they will tell. And it wasn't as, actually, it got better in the States. I spoke more Russian in the States than in Lithuania.
Is that because you're helping or working with people who are expat Russian as well?
No, my first job in the States was working with refugees. And I had to interview Russian-speaking refugees. And my first sentence I remember was always saying, "Sorry, I'm from Lithuania and my Russian is not native." And I was mixing English words, Lithuanian, Russians was hard. And then, like, after a month became easy. it was interesting because I understood Russian, everything. I just didn't spoke so much. And so when I start speaking, it became like English. I don't see the progress. And the Russian was really big progress fast, like was hard and then suddenly became easy.
So do you think you'll ever get to the point where, so you already mentioned that when you go back to see your friends, they say you're speaking, thinking like an American here. Do you think you'll get to the point where Lithuania seems like a foreign country to you? Does it, or does it some in some respects feel that way already?
No, when I go back, it's always so nice. It feels so very nice.
Calm and relaxed and it feels like going home.
Yes, it feels like going home. Even, yes, I definitely probably lost some friends, and I don't have as many friends as I used to have. Some, you know, it's relationship changes over time too, because you don't see people as much. I think that is the hardest part, you know, living abroad, that, you know, your relationship changes. But going back is always feels very special and very nice.
So what do organizations need to think about when they're working with people who are immigrants, expats, refugees, however you want to describe people at their various stages in life? What are the stereotypes? What are the things that organizations, leaders need to be aware of about real people?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there are a few things that we need to be aware of. Like, of course, you know, thinking about those external stereotypes that suddenly resumes automatically get rejected. Because if people assume that your experience is not relevant, your education is not relevant, your English maybe not good, even about interviews. Or, you know, when having that interview, you know, like feeling that it's okay to if you have somebody who's maybe not English as good, just finish your interview after first question. I think nobody should have that type of experience, because it's already going, you know, to the interview is very painful to have all the rejections. But when you feel that, you know, you're suddenly treated differently, it's even harder. But yeah, like I think having diverse recruiting teams, having a consultant and trainers who also have like an accent and speak not perfect English, it's okay, because you almost empower like your employees. You don't say, oh, like we value diversity, but then suddenly you don't have any trainers, you don't have any recruiters, you don't have anybody who sounds like that in HR. And it's, I think that is, you know, can be one thing. But a lot of, I think, organizations don't do any work or think about that. Many immigrants, expats develop that imposter syndrome. That suddenly you don't yourself consider opportunities that you think they are not for you. So, for example, like I never considered speaking, and speaking was for me probably even more challenging, because I had also this fear of public speaking. So it was not only accent, but fear. Also, like I suddenly started stumbling over words or stuttering. So that was another thing. But I've learned that even some people, many immigrants don't consider speaking or even doing videos on LinkedIn or creating your brand, because it feels uncomfortable. You do a video and then suddenly you think you will not get hired because you make mistakes. And so organizations need to help the employees to show the value of that diverse perspective, diverse voices, and to show that this is what makes you unique, and this is what makes you, and this is what makes you stand out. And so you have to work both external and internal barriers, because I don't know at least a single person who didn't start having this imposter syndrome moving to a new country. Well,
America, as we said earlier, is a very cosmopolitan country made up of people from many different backgrounds. I believe that Spanish is almost like the most common language in the US at the moment. You've got Hebrew with the Jewish community. You've got other prevalent languages, French, German, Italian. Everyone wants to be Italian in America, I believe. Yes, one of those heritages. There are lots of diverse languages. Do you feel that you stand out still in this cosmopolitan world? I presume Washington, D.C. is a pretty cosmopolitan area with lots of different communities and languages.
Well, it's in the workplace, but At the time, you know, when I did my first podcast and I totally hated it, I just didn't even want it to share because I saw how uncomfortable I was. You could tell it how unclearly I was speaking. And I wanted, you know, to project confidence with zero confidence. And at the time when people start reaching out to me and say, please continue this conversation, it's so important. I've realized at the time I had about 1,000 connections on LinkedIn and only 2 immigrants whom I knew at the time were doing videos on social media. And both of them had perfect English and very confident. And I've realized that a lot of other people felt like the same as me. And yes, you definitely, even myself, you know, like I would put this video and I would say, is it helps me? Maybe other people like it, but does it help me? Now I see that the people who would not hire me, they would not hire me anyway. And the people who actually other people opposite opportunities came because I start putting videos and starting getting invited to the conferences and events. Because yeah, you still, and I think also a lot of even if Americans, you know, the people who put videos, the ones who speak very well, and then suddenly I put something and then I stop in the middle of sentence, stumble, I don't know, like, but people actually, it's, yeah, you stand out, you know, just this is makes who I am, like in the past it, if that prevented, now I see that makes me still different.
I think anyone who speaks multiple languages, certainly fluently in multiple languages, has a gift that I don't have. I do speak a little bit of French, and petit peu, très lentement, yeah, slow and a little. I do a little bit of German, enough to order some food in a restaurant. Maybe even less Spanish I can pick up and maybe understand some of it. But I certainly couldn't speak Lithuanian. I certainly couldn't speak Russian, apart from the Hollywood stuff that you pick up and swear words and those sort of things. So I think I appreciate is the skill you have in speaking multiple languages, a skill I don't have. It doesn't make you less intelligent. As far as I can say, it makes you more intelligent, more capable, because you're having to double think and translate and do this all on the fly and still sound interesting, intelligent, and articulate and everything, and trying to communicate your message. So I would say what you have is a greater superpower than someone who doesn't speak more than one language, just because you've had to adapt. I think that's a very powerful skill you have, and it's underappreciated, undervalued.
Yeah, and yes, you mentioned you live in Washington, D.C., one of the most diverse cities. And yet, you know, in some neighborhoods, it's not like that too. Like I worked in a charter school in a black neighborhood in DC, and then suddenly all the students starting me asking if I'm new Spanish teacher. And I've realized there are only a few foreigners here and there are Spanish teachers. And this is where I told, you know, my boss, can I go and teach the class about my own country? And I never had as interested, you know, I thought like just to talk about 15 minutes. But the first sentence, the first thing I said at the beginning, I grew up in the Soviet Union. And do you know what this? And the kids didn't know. And the kids didn't know anything. And then this is where, like, thought I cannot tell about my school if the kids don't know what it is. And I never saw the kids so interested if you ask, like, really good questions. So how women are treated in your country and how people different than you are treated in your country and what things you do. And the best part was, like, after, like, the teacher told that the kids start being interested in other countries. And he said, like, you open the wall for those kids, the window to the world, and the kids starting later stopping in a corridor saying, I'm doing a research about your country. And I thought, how cool is that? And I've realized, yes, we live in Washington, D.C., one of the most diverse cities in the world. And yet in some neighborhoods, the kids in most neighborhoods there are not so much immigrants, and definitely not so many white immigrants. And for many of them, I was the first Eastern European whom we knew it. And for them, then it was very fascinating, my experience. And I think many people, yeah, even at for me at that time, I realized that suddenly that class that I just thought to tell about myself turned out like almost in about the cultures and about diversity and about belonging.
So as I introduce you, you're an international keynote speaker. So do you speak across the world or in America or online? Where do you speak?
Yes, I speak in-person and on online events. Just a year and a half ago, everywhere I applied, I got rejected. And then I got invited to my first conference, Expat Women Conference. And then from there, people liked and I got invited to Global HR Conference in Lithuania, in the tech, GSX, Society of Human Resources. And yes, even interesting, like even this month, yeah, I have a few podcasts and two of them from Britain. And one of them person I thought was from Switzerland, one American living in Chile. So it's interesting how when I start speaking, I got to know people from all around the world and events also, like some of them are global events too.
We're living in a funny time at the moment, politically polarized. People have opinions about people. People have opinions about immigrants and, as we mentioned earlier, good immigrants, bad immigrants, and those sort of phrases. But we've got wars going on in the world at the moment, and Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Middle East, rise of Islamophobia, rise of anti-Semitism, all these kind of things. Are you able to add your voice into those conversations as someone who has a different outside perspective? Because I know many Americans, without stereotyping or generalizing here, tend to very insular view of the world, not too worldly in some of their experiences.
Yeah, it's something that just became a little like less safe to talk about different issues, especially being, you know, not a citizen, being a permanent resident, because, yeah, it feels less safe. It feels, you can get more attacked. Is it worth it? And also, yeah, you may be called like anti-American. And I think if it's also like worth it, I still speak, like, for example, I've recently talked about misinformation, disinformation and propaganda. It is quite a political topic. And I brought about getting brainwashed myself, growing up in the Soviet regime and connected to today's time. I decided not to talk about, mention any names or anything, but I talked about the importance of protecting journalists and freedom of speech and standing for people who are doing very difficult job providing fact, checking facts, and it's our responsibility to stand out. And so, but yeah, like, so I bring it as much as I can, but I also think that sometimes I need to protect myself as well. Does
this make
sense?
Yeah. You have to look at what is your role in the world, I suppose. And sometimes it's not your fight or not your voice, and you have your own, as you say, safety to look after, both and your family, I guess, as well. So, yeah, it's, you can't all speak without consequence, can we?
Yeah, even like, you know, some topics, you know, like, yes, it's hard. Like, I definitely speak, I think, more than other people do. I share more things. But I'll give you like one example. So I, in my previous jobs, came Biden and I had a picture of Biden. And one day I just wanted to do this post and about pictures of famous people. It was not even political, it's about picture of famous people. And I had wanted to share Biden because I thought, well, this is the most powerful person in the States I meet. You know, he's now president. And it's not that, you know, he's, you know, maybe the most likable. I don't know. Like, it's not like that I like everything about him, but it's still like, you know, it's a picture of a famous person. And I showed the picture from my post of my kids. And my kids said, no way you can post this post. And I say, how come? You know, it's nothing political. He said, no, don't do that. It's just everybody will see it as a political. Because also was presidential elections coming up. And then I asked people in my network, maybe 20 people. I say, this is a picture. This is a post. What do you see? My kids say, it's not, don't post it. From 20 people, just 2 people say, Solveiga, post it. Everybody else say, don't do it. You're starting your own consultancy. People just will see your the picture, will automatically start hating you. Do you want that? And I thought, well, I don't, you know, I really don't. And they say, like, if you would do something like that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, everybody will think as it is, not political post. It's just you're sharing your perspective. You're having a picture of a famous person. And then I thought, you know, like, it's really like, this is just an example that how political things became and how became a little like safe and safe. Like, I thought, like, in any time in the history, if I was an immigrant, I would come and I would have a picture of the most influential person in the country and one of the most influential persons in the world. You would be okay. And then even like I say, why you just share a picture of Lithuanian president? So they thought sharing picture of Lithuanian president was okay, but of American is not okay. And be American citizen, you know, Mike is American citizen too. And so this is just an example that even like pictures can be like not okay to share. And then like at that point, like almost 18 people saying no. Yeah, and I decided, well, maybe I don't. Can I ask you now a question related to this? You interview a lot of people from different parts of the world. Do you find also that, you know, especially maybe people who are now like in the States, but maybe in other countries too, that they feel suddenly less safe talking about certain issues, especially about the politics or anything, you know, do you find that it's less comfortable? Yeah.
I think anybody who would maybe describe themselves as marginalized, minority, whatever it may be, most people I speak to in the UK and around the US, certainly, and other parts of the world, certainly feel more uncomfortable, certainly feel there's been a shift in perspective, you know, from governments, from society. And it's almost like the people who hold the privileges, the people who are the majority, are pushing back. And people who are being marginalized feel less safe, more scared, feel in the media, feel it politically, that things are scary, I guess. I feel that myself. I know people who are black or brown or people of color, people are from LGBTQIA plus backgrounds, people are from, you say, migrants, expats, all feeling less safe than they were. And we see a rise of populism, nationalism, right-leaning politics, and that's becoming the kind of the mainstream narrative. A lot of people I talk to and the world I live in is feeling less safe now than it did a year ago, certainly. Certainly. And I think a lot of that is maybe due to maybe the political shift in the US has had a huge impact on that. The war in Ukraine, I think, has had a shift in that as well. The rise of anti-immigration sentiment, certainly in the UK, I'm seeing that. It's a less safe time for many people, or perceived to be less safe.
Yeah. And I think, you know, definitely. I think that is almost, for me, more concerning because, you know, growing up and having that experience in the Soviet regime when people are even afraid to share things with their own family members, or like even now, like seeing, you know, that basically same things happening in Russia and many other places in the world. And in the States too, like people are less open. Some people are still, but some other people are less open to talk about it. And for me, that is more concerning. It's okay to agree, to disagree, but it's still important to share perspectives as much as you can. And I found that you build that courage and strength every single time you bring some conversations. As I said, I try to stay as safe as possible, but not like completely avoiding the conversations, and more like bringing that still brings that pause or brings that discussions.
And have you noticed a shift yourself in the last 12 months in how safe you feel?
Yeah, definitely. It's less, but it's also almost, it makes more meaningful. A lot of people ask me, so how does Solveiga you feel now? Like, do you get a lot of backlash? And actually I say, yes, I do. But it happened before, like when I start speaking about immigrants, I think I lost about 10% or more connections, or some people never respond or ignore. Or some people say disconnect specifically, you know, and mention something. But actually starting getting also more support. I starting get more invitations because when I put that immigrant voice in HR, people who are against immigrants, they don't even connect with me. They don't support. But the people who are supporting, when we see those first words and we say, oh, like, what are you doing? Or let me see what you're talking about. So actually, it almost also helps me because it attracts right people, the people who want to support the work I do. So actually, maybe in some ways, it helps me out.
I have the same view that I'd rather polarize people. I'd rather people who weren't interested left the room, and I'll just keep talking to people who are interested in this. Mm-hmm. By being very clear about what you do and who you help and what you're for, if people don't like that, that's on them. They can leave the room, as far as I'm concerned. And you end up having conversations with people who want to talk to you.
Yeah. And that's why we have this conversation. It's really, like, you know, incredible, you know, from different countries, but yeah, like, we feel a way, like, I like how you told at the beginning, you like conversations for humans who care for humans, something like that you said, and I thought, oh, this is so simple, but so beautiful. And you said, like, I just want to be curious, you know, and see where the conversation will lead. And yes.
So I noticed in the what you wrote, bearing in mind, you wrote this almost a year ago. One of the things you said, you suggested that I asked you is, what does achieving the American dream mean to you? Has that changed in the last year? What is the American dream that you're aspiring to?
Yeah, actually, it didn't change as much because in some ways, you know, like, I think I would never talk about immigrant experiences or how to support immigrants or expats or if I didn't have that experience myself. Because, as I mentioned, that experience is very difficult, but it helped me to help others better. And yeah, like, in the past, my probably American dream was to achieve my own success, but I found, like, how much is more rewarding for me to help others and to inspire other people. Like, I never, as I mentioned before, I never considered even speaking, but I never thought people would resonate with my speaking. And then suddenly seeing that other people start posting or speaking or considering opportunities because something I shared, it feels rewarding. And even especially now in this polarized society where suddenly even the word immigrant feels not okay, I feel okay saying, you know, this is my fiction. I feel proud to be an immigrant and why I feel proud of it. And yes, maybe I could use a word other people more comfortable with. But for me, expat doesn't describe completely my experience. I feel more like an immigrant and I'm not ashamed. I'm proud of that experience. And I want for other people to see that, yes, to be proud, not to be ashamed.
Fabulous. Oh, I'm 100% behind you, and I admire that you have the courage to have a voice and you still want to be heard, and you're still inspiring people who are following behind you, walking beside you, or even in front of you, looking for inspiration, looking for somebody who can put into perspective what you've had to cope with and how you've adapted over the last 20 or so years. So it's fascinating. So, Solveiga, how can people get hold of you? They want to find out more. What's the best way of contacting you?
Yeah, so probably LinkedIn. This is where like I post everything. I have a Facebook account and Instagram, but I don't actually post most things here. It's hard to keep up with all these different social media accounts. I also had an Immigrant Voice in HR website, but LinkedIn has the most information. This is where I post all the speaking events and...
Fabulous. Well, I'll put those in the show notes. And just to help people out who are searching for you, Solveiga is Solveiga, and Jaskunas is Jaskunas. And that, put that into LinkedIn, they'll find you there. And immigrantvoiceinhr.com is the website, yeah? Fabulous. Fabulous. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed our conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.